So according to the mind-only school, all phenomena can be grouped into three categories. Yeah, they can be included in grouped into the three categories. And what are the three? They are the three natures. What are the three natures? The thoroughly established nature, other powered nature, and imputational nature.
我都是你这这咋咋的，咋这个过了向往是多少？这他不经过的，从哪里的？他没打过谁的，只管一个人，明看他们的，我都这些没打过谁，他个人他向往谁的，提了快一点嘛的，搞过来向往是多看的那些样子，他那个梦就搞了看不过去的话，提的结果那个没打过，没打过是明带多了向往谁是吧
？Okay, so according to the mind only school, so all phenomena can be included in these three categories, the three natures, yeah? The thoroughly established nature, other powered nature, and imputational nature. So sometimes, you know, people get stuck, you know, just at the level of the word, you know. You know, they cannot go beyond the level of words, you know. You know, they're confounded by the terms such as other powered nature. You know, you don't have to be confused or confounded by the word. You just have to know what exactly it means, you know. Other powered nature is just another way of saying, according to this school, impermanent phenomenon, compounded phenomenon, composed phenomenon. Okay?
他当然积极，他有向往，积极，积极，就要动爱的了向往噻，他没当过噻，他听不。So,
other power natures, other power phenomena, basically according to this school, I mean, other power phenomena, composed phenomena, impermanent phenomena, you're all talking about the same thing. Yeah. So what is the main characteristic of such a phenomenon? You know, they undergo momentary change, isn't it? Impermanent phenomenon or composed phenomenon or other power natures basically refers to phenomena that undergo momentary change, changing from moment to moment. And this change is due to the cause that brought about that particular phenomenon. Okay? So, this composed phenomena, impermanent phenomena, are under the power of the causes that brought it about. So, therefore, it's called other-powered. You understand? Why impermanent phenomena change from moment to moment? So you understand what is impermanent phenomenon, isn't it? When you talk about impermanent phenomenon, what is it? What is impermanent phenomenon? What is composed phenomenon? Those phenomena that undergo momentary change. All impermanent phenomena are like that. They undergo momentary change. Why is it the nature of impermanent phenomena to undergo momentary change? Why do things undergo momentary change? Because they are under the control, the power of the causes, their own respective causes, the causes that brought about its existence. So that's the meaning of other power. It's just a way of trying to, you know, the word other power, you know, is just one way of helping us to, you know, understand, you know, what exactly is an impermanent phenomenon or what is a composed phenomenon. Boleh? No? Then you have thoroughly established nature, right? Oh, and then again, you know, again you get confounded by the term, I cannot remember. Put it simply, in this, it means emptiness. And in this context, you know, we're just discussing the mind only school, yeah? It's the ultimate, it's same as ultimate truth. So, thoroughly established nature means emptiness, yeah. And according to this school, what kind of emptinesses are there? No? There's the emptiness of a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, yeah. Then it's the emptiness of subject and object as different entities, right? Okay? Then there's the emptiness of phenomena as naturally basis of engagement or referent of names. So these emptinesses, these are all thoroughly established natures. So in short, what is thoroughly established nature is emptiness. Emptiness of what? Emptiness of a self or person and emptiness of self or phenomena. And in this context, in this school, is an ultimate truth. Emptiness is an ultimate truth, yeah. So in short, thoroughly established nature, ultimate truth, emptiness in this system, in this school, has the same meaning. So then you have kuntak or imputational nature. Okay, let's say imputational nature. Yeah. So in short, it's kuntak independent. So there are kuntaks that are existence, and there are kuntaks that are non-existence. think I'm not sure. Anyway. So, imputational natures which are existence refers to all permanent phenomena other than emptiness. In short, for example, uncompounded space. So in short, the existent imputational natures which are existence refers to all permanent phenomena other than emptiness. Then what about imputational natures which are non-existence? An example is external objects. According to this school, external objects do not exist. Yeah. But nevertheless, there is the concept of external objects. Right? I mean, like, what is external object? According to it is an imputation. It is an imputation through the force of conceptuality. Yeah. So basically, if you're talking about imputational natures which are non-existence, yeah. You know, for example, external objects in this school is a non-existence, but nevertheless, it is external object is an imputation by conceptual mind. For example, another example is sky flower. Sky flower don't exist, yeah? Sky flower doesn't exist, yeah? But nevertheless, it's imputed, right? Imputed by mind, isn't it? Imputed by conceptuality, isn't
it?
Okay, so you know, so these are the stuff you have to remember. It's very basic, yeah. So according to the Mayoni school, so all phenomena are basically, you know, included in these three natures, yeah. And of the three, the thoroughly established nature and other power nature are truly established. Right? I mean, it's in the chart. It's there in the chart. The chart that was given out right at the beginning of the class, yeah. Of this module, yeah. So thoroughly established natures and other power natures are truly established, whereas imputational natures are not truly established, yeah. Tenpa Madrup.
Oh, Tukshine. Te Siddhokala, ta Shavanda Kunda Siddhokala, ta Tongba, man, Tandam Tenpa Siddhokala, Tongba Nila Kwaya Siya. Ta Tongba Nila Shembe, ta Yuebe Chue Tinto La, ta Kunzo Tenpa Siya, ta Shavanda Kunda Di, ta Kunzo Tenpa Chaya Siya. Tandam Tenpa Siddhokala, Tongi Kona Yen Siya.
So, what is ultimate truth? According in this school, is emptiness, right? So, if emptiness is ultimate truth, then every other phenomenon that exists would be conventional truths, isn't it? Which means, out of the three natures, the thoroughly established nature is an ultimate truth. Whereas the other power natures and the imputational natures which are existence are conventional truths, yeah. Dio.
Something Kiepo is what? Huh? Kiepo. we all capable of mind on the screen. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. So, ordination, that, tanda,私ね、だってね、またのどうしてだかそうです。その単位と一緒のやつのロソプスだった。何十、かそれだ、こう、ちょっとまあ、死だち、だんだ、ペナタオカで茶茶し、ジャズミタバ、そしてたんじゃ、どまわ、しょうたんじゃ、どんしたんじゃ、ながれて、しょうわ、せいしゅうわ。ちなおね、たぞうぞうとさで、そしてたんじゃ、どまわで、せいし。ただ、どまわ、いんばで、たこ、
내가 동아에 남시 때 내가 소야 여러분 요아레스 이 진짜 가도스나 다음에 말하고스 근데 저기 저기 디스도가나 다 다음에 남시아디 뭐는 고아차에 매듭이 나와 차이 다 탁독사디 탁독다 마시 조시아디 다 닝보디 네 니모 세발시아디 남시아디 숨고 요아레 봐봐 다니에 남시 시라 샤오체 티딩로 남에 남시 때나 봐야지 숨고 요아레
We have to understand, you know, why we are learning this, you know, all these things, and the four tenets. It's very important. And we should always link what we are learning back to the four seals. Now. And the four seals, we talked about the four seals at the beginning of this class, right? The four seals, which, I mean, in Tibetan it's very long, in English it's four seals, but if you flesh it out, it means the four seals that attest, you know, that a particular doctrine is Buddhist. That means the seal, you know, that guarantees a chop, you know, this is the Buddhist path, you know. Yeah, in short, it's the four seals, isn't it? Right? And of the four seals, I mean, you know, we start with what? I'm suddenly got a mental block. All composed phenomena are impermanent. The second one, all contaminated phenomena are misery. The third one, all phenomena are empty and selfless. And number four, nirvana is peace, yeah. So, in particular, you look at the second seal, all contaminated phenomena and the nature of suffering. So, at the end of the day, what we are looking for is an end to our problems and misery. But then the question is, can our misery ever be stopped? And the answer, the Buddhist answer is all our misery, our problems can be stopped. Because of what? What is the main reason? Because all phenomena are selfless. So which means whether we can put an end to our suffering or not depends on whether we come to, whether we understand selflessness. So, in the four tenets, they have their own presentation about different stuff. But the essence of what they're trying to say is their respective ideas of what constitutes this selflessness. What exactly is this selflessness that if you realize can put an end to all our misery and problems, you see.
Tetapi dengan mudah bertafsir di, tak dah mampu memahami dengan mereka sukar si. Tadi, tak nampak tak, nampak ni import tahu tidak tahu yang ni. Sebab tak, tak dah mampu komjen, tak macam ni mungkin kandis cungur tahu tu, tak sama tangkut tu, tak masih dah mampu tidak percaya, tak ni mungkin cungur kandis tahu yang ni. Tadi macam tak sama tangkut tak, tak nampak kekuatan si cakap apa tak komjen.
So what we don't want is suffering, all the problems. So the question is, can it be put in an end or not? So, and the answer that is given in the teachings is that if we realize selflessness, then we can put an end to all our problems and suffering. So then, that leads to the question, how on earth does a realization of selflessness reduce and destroy our afflictions? That's the question we have to think for ourselves. Yeah. So, how do each of these tenets, you know, what do they say about selflessness, which is supposedly the antidote that will put an end to all our misery? So this is something that we have to learn and then discover ourselves in our own experience. We have to, when we say practice, meditate, whatever, you know, we have to look at our own experience and then see how it works, you see. And if you notice by now, when we were looking at the Hinayana tenets, the Great Exposition School and the Sutra School, when they talked about selflessness, do you notice that they only talked about the selflessness of person? They do not talk about selflessness of phenomena, yeah? But once you start looking at the minor tenets, which we have just begun, you know, the Mayoni School, on top of talking about the selflessness of person, they talk about the selflessness of phenomena, isn't it? So all of us have So what I'm saying to you is not, you know, just a delivery or lecture now, you know, but rather as I talk, you have to think about it. You see, it's kind of like something to reflect on, to meditate upon. You see, isn't it? In our minds, we have different kinds of afflictions, isn't it? We get upset, we have anger. And then we also have desire, attachment, isn't it? Right. So take, for example, attachment. When attachment arises and a desire arises, we have to ask ourselves, look inside and discover, how does attachment arise? How does it arise? It is very clear that whenever we are very emotionally involved with an object, you know, very attracted to an object or to a person, that emotional involvement always, involves, the appearance of a very attractive person or attractive object. Similarly, when we get upset, at some situation or some person, there's always the emotional involvement is always based on the appearance of something very unpleasant, something you don't like, something that looks bad, you know, isn't it? But it is not just, you know, appearance of a attractive person or object that leads you to be attached. And it's not just an appearance of a very unpleasant situation or unpleasant object or person that makes you upset. It's not just that. But it is based on an I, a sense of I, that that person is attractive, looks attractive to me. I find the person attractive. Then we get emotionally involved. The I is always involved, isn't it? Similarly, it's because the person appears unpleasant to me. Ugly, unpleasant, you know, not nice to me, to the I oneself. Then we get upset, isn't it? It's very clear, right? We don't get, you know, attracted to a person and an object just because that object or person appears pleasant to somebody else. It has to appear pleasant, attractive to the I, me. Then we get emotionally involved. And similarly, just because somebody you know, looks like an idiot or very unpleasant or bad to somebody else, that is not the reason for us then to get upset at the person. No, yeah. The person has, the object or the situation has to appear unpleasant to me. Oh, then I get upset, right? No? So, independence on the object or the person appearing either pleasant to me or unpleasant to me, then I get attached or I become angry. So all the afflictions like anger and attachment always arise in dependence on the sense of I, me, I, isn't it?
Oh, that is the color, chisam, the ma, said the shoes, that you. That's the chasm shoes, seeing the color. That chisam, the matti, that chasm, which you test and get ma, said the matin, chisam, that massive chasm, test and see the doggy, chapa, chimbu, you want, the wine, chimbu, you want. I think on the shit to him.
Right? So, whether we get attached or are upset at some situation or an object or person, those emotions always arise from within a sense of I. And an object or a person appearing either pleasant to me or unpleasant to me. Based on that, I either get attached or upset, isn't it? This is very clear. So which means, the stronger a sense of I, the more we think this I is everything, is the most important, the everything, the most precious, the stronger this attitude of this way of looking at the eye, oh, commensurate with that way of looking at the eye, then you know you have stronger, either stronger attachment, stronger anger. It's very apparent, eh? If you look at how our mind works, it's very clear. Likewise, you know, we get also very attached, you know, to our friends or people who are my friends, my side, you know, my group. So the stronger the way of looking at that the friend in that way, oh my friend, then stronger the attachment, right? Similarly, with regards to the situations of people that we don't like, oh, this is not my side, no, not my group, or I don't like, or my enemy, you know, then stronger, yeah, again, the anger will be stronger. On the contrary, if we just relax, you know, and let things, you know, just sometimes just let go, sometimes, you know, or just loosen the grip, you know, on this sense of I, me, you know, then we can tell from our own, even our own experience, you know, the more we are able to do that, you know, a little bit more space in the mind, more spacious, more, you know, more relaxed and loosen the grip, then definitely you can see a corresponding decrease in. Anger, attachment, and so forth, isn't it? It's clear from our own experience, we can tell,
yeah.
Friends exist, enemies exist, yeah. My friends exist, my enemies exist. Of course they exist. But while they exist, if we, you know, just loosen the grip on the I, you know, on the ego, on the I, you know, a little bit, you know, give the mind more freedom, more space, yeah. So the more space we give ourselves, you know, loosen the grip on the I, you know, then the attachment that usually arise in dependence on, you know, seeing or holding on to some people as my friends and holding on to others as enemies, you know, then which gives rise to anger, right? So the anger and the attachment that arises from those situations would decrease. Even though they still remain as friends and enemies, but if you loosen the grip on the eye, you know, the afflictions generated in relation to them would decrease. Yeah. So, enemies exist, friends exist, they definitely exist. There will be unpleasant objects and pleasant objects. But the thing is that if we loosen the grip on the eye, then the usual anger attachment that arises due to holding to this concept that, oh, they are my friends and enemies, or that kind of anger attachment will not be as strong. So, you know, even just having some idea of selflessness, yeah. Selflessness, some idea, you know, can really help, you know, lessening of the afflictions like anger, attachment, yeah.
当时跟着上不当的生活，嗯，等等，是吧？当时能给你从刚接到起步，到卡老师，就起步能得到。 다 도시 파람전 조만남도는 도시 파람지 통해도 가나 제 양 부모이나 다 종합되다 남주다 민다샤비 뒤에 총안에 들고 가다 통해도 가나 지 이동한 시통돼 알아봐 이동한 통하는 시 어 중남 옆에 착바대 망개 깨지 무도 가
So, let's imagine you walk into a jewelry shop. Yeah. You walk into a jewelry shop, especially women, you know, they get very excited, you know, usually, especially when they look at diamonds, you know, whatever, you know. So then, you know, there's an appearance of, wow, you know, wow, something nice, diamond, isn't it? It's very nice, right? Then, based on that, the thought arises, yeah, possible, yeah, wow. How nice if I have it? Guys, you don't think that you're innocent, okay? Guys will probably look at cars. Everybody's guilty. Yeah. I mean, diamond is just an example. It could be whatever, no? Something that is considered wow, to be very nice, to be, you know, wow, you know, something that you know that people are talking about, like, wow, you know. So then you know you look at you go and you go, then you go and look at it, like, you know, for yourself. And you're just using diamond as an example. Okay? So you know, imagine you know, something that that you find nice, then you may have the thought, oh, how nice if I have it, yeah. And let's say one acts upon the thought, one buys the diamond or whatever it is, you know. Then once you buy the diamond, it becomes yours, yeah. Oh, the eye has come into the picture, right? Now it's not just a diamond; it's my diamond, you know. So you can see that the difference in the emotional involvement with the object, just after buying the diamond and before buying the diamond. After the eye comes into the picture, the attachment is so much stronger, isn't it? Not only the object looks better than before, but it's more precious than before, but the attachment, you know, the clinging is stronger than before because the eye has come into the picture, because it's become yours, you see? My diamond. It's very clear, yeah? The object hasn't changed, it's still the diamond. It doesn't matter whether the diamond is in your house, who's somebody's house, you know. But you know, the object hasn't changed. But what has changed is, you know, you became the owner. When the eye came into the picture, oh, then, you know, it's a very strong sense of clinging, much stronger than before, yeah, isn't it? So what has changed? Our involvement. So the eye has come into the picture. Yeah.
Okay.
然后, and when you lose your diamond, oh, you lose sleep also, yeah? because it's your diamond, yeah? Because if it is not your diamond, it's the same object sitting in somebody else's shop. You don't care what happens, you know, the shop is bombed, or somebody steals the diamond, whatever. You can't be bothered, right? I mean, that's just an exaggeration on the translator's part of it. Come on, dramatic effect, but you know, the point, you get the point. If it's not yours, you can't be bothered about it, right? You don't worry, you don't lose sleep over it, right? But when it is your possessions, when the eyes come into picture, and when you lose it, oh, then, you know, we get upset, worried, you know,
yeah.
So in those cases, you know, when you know there's a very strong sense of an I, you know. So essentially, what we may be grasping at, you know, is a real permanent I. Oh, you know, we say a permanent, unitary, independent I. Eh? That's what we are grasping at. Yeah. Also, we are grasping at a self that is able to stand on its own. Self-instituting I, you know, right there, a real self-sufficient. Basically, yeah, that's it, yeah? Isn't it? So, you know, in the Hinayana Tenets, right, the Great Exposition School and the Sutra School, we've been talking about what? You know, the emptiness of the permanent, unitary, independent self, you know, all these big words and emptiness of a self, sufficient, substantially existent person. But what it is talking about is how we operate. So in this Hinayana tenets, these two kinds of self or person do not exist, yeah, isn't it? So if we understand what exactly, we understand basically, we first have to understand how there isn't a permanent, unitary, independent self. On top of that, if we can understand, we see for ourselves how, although it appears, but a self-sufficient, substantially existent person does not exist. We understand from our own experience, you know, we see through, you know, that kind of grasping, then, you know, with that little bit understanding of selflessness of person, then you definitely, you can see, you know, a reduction, you know. You know, in this clinging on to this I, you know, and which then leads to a reduction in the afflictions, you know, whether it's anger, attachment. Definitely, we can see a reduction,
yeah.
So, you know, we talk so much about, oh, you know, meditation on selflessness, emptiness, and blah, blah, blah. But essentially, what on earth, what exactly is that? It's to realize, discover for ourselves that the I which we believe to exist, the I that appears to exist in a particular way, isn't it? Oh, that does not exist whatsoever. The I that appears to exist in one particular way, is to first realize that that is not how the I exists. End of the day is that. End of the day, yeah. So we have to discover for ourselves in our own experience, you know, how if when we follow after this belief, you know, that there's a real I, you know, whether it's self-sufficient, substantially existent, whatever, you know, and then how it leads to increase in afflictions. But on the other hand, if we understand, so of course we have to see why in reality a self-sufficient, substantially existent person does not exist, for example. So if we see for ourselves using the reasons that it doesn't exist, and then when we see through it, you know, oh, it doesn't exist, then definitely we can come to experience by ourselves the reduction in the afflictions that come with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the whole point of meditating on the selflessness of a person is to reduce and weaken the apprehension of a self, a person. And when we reduce and weaken the apprehension of a self, a person, we also reduce and weaken the afflictions. If we reduce and weaken the afflictions, oh, definitely we will have less problems, less suffering. So we can discover for ourselves that by reflecting, thinking, meditating on the selflessness of person, then we can see, you know, discover for ourselves a reduction in this self-grasping, which will lead us, you know, we'll see a reduction in our afflictions, you know, like attachment and anger. Yeah. Because when we have less, you know, grasping, clinging on to me, then there will be less clinging, you know, to my friends, my group, my enjoyments. You know. And when we have less attachment for these things, definitely there will be less anger. Because we get upset. A lot of times because of our attachment to these things, yeah. Isn't it?
What does it mean? Chedanta? Tatunda, Chedanta? Tatambo, Makita, Tatama, Tambo, Nashuin, Dukana, Chedama, Dirty Namsha, Shin, Dukana, Solo, Tatami, Namsha, Kansai, Tami, Namsha, Solo, Matuki, Tami, Namsha, Sugi, Kansai, Tami, Shish. Tatachin, Tang, 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 Tang,
So therefore, you know, if you look at the first two tenets, you know, the first two Buddhist tenets, the Great Exposition School and the Sutra School, you know, their presentation on selflessness of persons, yeah. There's only the presentation of selflessness of person, yeah. And that is kind of like the first stage of the practice, you know. It is through realizing, through meditating and realizing the selflessness of person, it's only then we can see a reduction in our afflictions, yeah, isn't it? So, you know, first, you know, so of course we have to realize for ourselves, you know, then how a permanent unitary and independent self does not exist, and how a self-sufficient, substantially existent person does not exist. You know. So by seeing for ourselves a discovery, using reasons, you know, then we'll reduce that grasping, you know, at a person, you know. And then with the, when we reduce our grasping, clinging on to this identity of this self-identity, you know, which is a mistaken one, then we see a reduction in the afflictions, yeah. Okay, so this is like kind of like the first, you know, stage of practice that is presented in the first two tenets, isn't it? Then when you come to the Mahayana tenets, starting in the Mahayana school, yeah, then there's a presentation of the selflessness of phenomena, isn't it, right? And why is this so? Yes, you can train in the initial stages of just meditating on the selflessness of person that is presented in the Hinayana tenets. And through that, definitely you see a reduction in the anger and attachment, the afflictions, definitely. But nevertheless, phenomena, pleasant and unpleasant, still appear to us. No? There's still appearance of nice things, unpleasant things, good people, bad people, you know. And based on that, those appearances, we still get emotionally involved, yeah, again, yeah. Still, we will get upset. Still, we will get attached, isn't it? Right?
Oh, that in the same do kala, that should be the man, second nam shadi de yamashi. Kan nan ju yidum chodam, kan lang lan nan ju yidum chodam, kan lang lan nan ju yidum chodam, and dao to do your matters. So in the same do kala, the mother never chases. Kansai dame chipu, mother chugi dame yama the sedile, that should chodam dame yama the same do kala, and it go.
Oh, this is when the selflessness of phenomena comes into play. You know, the understanding of the selflessness of phenomena comes into play, isn't it? Right? So, because, you know, we still get upset or attached because, you know, because we react to the appearance of pleasant and unpleasant phenomena, isn't it? There's still the appearance, right? You cannot stop it, right? Oh, so this is where the understanding of selflessness of phenomena comes into play, you know, isn't it? Earlier on, in the Hinayana tenets, there's only the presentation of the selflessness of person, isn't it? You're only dealing with, you know, our how the involvement of the I in the experience. But that did not deal with the objects to which the I is attached, to which the I is upset at, yeah, isn't it? So here in the presentation of the selflessness of phenomena, there's the understanding that phenomena, although they appear as if they were self-instituted, as if they had some a self. There's something, an identity from the side of the phenomena, a self, yeah. Oh, although they appear in this way, in reality, that's not how they exist. So, when we've, So if you combine this understanding with the earlier understanding of the selflessness of person, then you know you have in your hands something more powerful, isn't it? So much more powerful, right? To work at the afflictions, isn't it? So now you have the two selflessness coming into play. You know? Yeah. On one hand, you have an understanding of the selflessness of the person as described earlier. How, you know, the self does not exist in the way it appears. Yeah. But on top of that, now, if you combine the understanding of selflessness of person with an understanding that phenomena do not exist in the way they appear to you, they do not exist in the way you believe them to exist. No. So, now you have an understanding of the selflessness of yourself, the person, and the selflessness of the phenomena that you are either attached to or you are upset at. Don't you think this understanding is much more powerful than just having an understanding that the self does not exist in the way it appears? No?
Oh, that in the Samukamala, Jeva, that's Tawa Tawachim to the Shin Dukana, that's something to the Shish, Chicken, and the other.
So when we start with looking at the minor tenets, you start with the mind-only school. So they talk about the selflessness of phenomena. Yeah. On top of the selflessness of persons, they talk about the selflessness of phenomena. So what, you know, as I mentioned earlier, what exactly is the selflessness of phenomena? In short, what are you meditating on? Basically, you are to discover for yourself that phenomena, other than the self, yeah, phenomena don't exist in the way they appear, basically. And that's the whole point, end of the day, what you're trying to find out. Phenomena don't exist in the way they appear. So that is the what you're trying to find out. And in this school, according to the Mayoni school, what do we mean when you say phenomena don't exist in the way it appears? So according to the Mayoni school, this is where the non-existence of external objects come into being, come into play. Boleh.
Cakap.
Tiga. Wujib ke? Bila? Bisa lah.
Oh, tu sini. Tentang ini. Tak, orang lah itu mana cuci nanti tu kan? Yu di cuci ni apa tu sini? Ah, orang lah nanti tu. Nama tu tu orang cuci yang mana tu sini cuma suci mungkin kece.
So to meditate on the selflessness of phenomena means to understand, to discover that phenomena do not exist in the way they appear to us. So in according to the Mayoni school, they say that although as the appearance of external objects. But in reality, external objects do not exist. Yeah. It's because, you know, so because when something pleasant appears to us, our minds, you know, we get attached to it. Because we get attached because we think that there's something outside there, you see. Something real outside of the mind, something real. You know, we believe in that. There's an appearance of a something outside there, and we believe in it, you see. And then therefore we get attached, you see. So here, according to the Mayani school, oh, that external, that appearance of an external object, oh, that, although it appears, but that's not how things exist. So the Mayoni school explains that, you know, that that what you see, you know, all these forms and sounds and all these objects, they do not exist as separate from your mind, outside of your mind, but rather how they exist is they are just an appearance of a projection of your mind. Or specifically, it's a projection of the ripening of a karmic seed or imprint in your mind. You know, and then due to the awakening of the seed and the imprint, you know, oh, then you have this projection, this appearance of this object. It's none. That's it. That's what the object is. None other than that. You know, it's not something external to your mind. Something right, real out there. You know. So there's no external object, So an appearance of a beautiful object, you know, you experiencing an appearance of a beautiful object is only due to a ripening of a karmic imprint in your mind. There is nothing coming from an object outside of your mind. So if we are able to understand, well, according to the Mayoni school's view, we are able to understand that, hey, you know, this appearance of these, you know, beautiful forms and so forth, objects, is just a projection of my own mind, you know. It's just a ripening of a particular karmic imprint in my own mind. Other than that, you know, there's really nothing out there outside of my mind from his own side, you know, a real external object, you know. So if we have this kind of worldview, definitely it will help us, you know, reduce our, you know, grasping and attachment, right, to such objects, isn't it? No?
I think so. Oh, that's
You know, sometimes we have a very exciting dream, is there? All kinds of stuff. Oh, then we get emotionally involved in the dream. Oh, you know, then we get very attached, you know, or get upset about what, you know, isn't it? But when we wake up for the dream and we realize it's just a dream, suddenly that all that emotional involvement is gone, yeah? or whatever fear or say attachment, you know, desire is gone, right? No? When we realize it's a dream, then you know whatever fear or attachment you know that we have during the dream disappears, isn't it? Because sometimes you know when you wake up from the dream, in the initial moments, there's still the tense feeling. What is tense or fear or very excited or very attached? You know, it's there, right? It's there. But then when you're a little bit more awake, it's just a dream. You know? Then it's all gone, right? So if we have the world view that there are external, or based on a world view that there is something right there outside of the mind, and there's the real external object right there, and everything is coming from the side of the object, right? You know, pleasant, unpleasant. Then our emotional involvement will be very strong. It's coming from the side. It's nothing to do with my mind. It's there's something real there. Nice, unpleasant. But if we, think about the mind only school view, and we follow after it, if we then think, hey, although there's this appearance of a real external object right there, but if we understand, this is a projection of my own mind. This is made up by my mind. What I see is none other than just the result of a ripening of a karmic imprint in my mind. That's all. It's coming as a projection of my mind. Nothing really right, no real external object right there separate from the mind. So if we think along those lines, I think definitely we can, see a reduction, in our emotional involvement with the object, right? Whether it's anger or attachment, no? Right? Oh, it's just my mind. So according to the Mayoni school, we come to realize that all conventional truths, and they do not exist in the way they appear to us. How there is no external object. Then we can, this is how we, over time reduce our, clinging, grasping, anger, attachment, those things, So, from this, one can understand that by delineating the view of selflessness of phenomenon, or in simple English, by understanding, you know, and what is the self-existence of phenomena, you know, and you have more powerful tools in your hands, you know, to work and the afflictions, you know. Because now, besides having a view of the self-existence of persons, if you add in the view of the self-existence of phenomena, definitely you know your what you have at your disposal, you know, is more powerful than just having the view of the self-existence of persons, isn't it? The mind only school, the autonomy middle way school, and the consequence middle way school, of course, they all talk about the selflessness of phenomena. But they differ as to what is the selflessness of phenomena. So, according to the Middle Way School, they basically say that things and phenomena are not true. The way things and phenomena appear to us, you know, is not a factual or accurate representation of the reality. It's not true. Yeah. So, according to the Middle Way School, they explain that when things and phenomena appear to us, when things and phenomena appear, they appear as if that is the way that the object actually exists. That is the very nature. The way the phenomena appears is exactly the nature of that object, how it actually exists. Hello? We're talking about, in general, how the Middle Way School explains. Yeah. So according to the Middle Way, the Madhyamaka School, in general, when it's talking about how things appear to us, not talking about the reality, according to them, when things appear to us, they appear as if that was the final nature, the ultimate nature of that object. There's nothing beyond that. That is what we call in technical language the final mode of abiding of the object.
랑시 타도도 나시 다 랑시 타도도 되나 최대도 랑시 타도도 죽어야지 전 담벌 죽어야지 다 랑시 최대도 때 랑시 뒤 나 랑시 뒤 가서 랑시 나와 나서 랑시 뒤 타도도 맞고 가시 뒤 좀나 다 전 담벌 죽어야지 다 다
So, how things and events and phenomena appear to us, according to the Middle Way School, yeah? Things appear to us as if that was the final, the ultimate nature, the final nature, what the object really is. Oh, if phenomena existed in the way they appear to us, that means that is the meaning of ultimate establishment. So according to the Middle School, things appear to us, we're talking about appearance, yeah. Things appear to us as if that is how it exists, finally. The ultimate, you know, the actual, I mean, in simple English, the actual face of the person, you're seeing the person, there's no mask, nothing, you know, what you see is what you get. You know, this is how things appear to us. This is real. That is the final nature of the object. Okay, that's how things appear to us. So according to the Middle Way School, if phenomena existed in the way it appears to us, that would mean that the object would have to be ultimately established. That would mean that the object would have to be truly established. That is the meaning of true establishment or ultimate establishment, yeah, according to the Middle Way School, yeah. Okay?
Are you getting somewhere or no? You must squeeze your brain, yeah.
Huh? Squeeze already, yeah. What is it?
must squeeze, otherwise.胸前不打都干了一会儿，对吧？到南京王学进那干了一会儿，到胸前不打王学的干了卡了，什么鬼了，对吧？什么修当了，什么什么，那妈妈去了，那时候也是个，啊，到八月没几天嘛，到王国来了，对吧？王国今天开始卡了，王国到八月没卡了嘛，先王国来了修的，然后呢，请你兄弟什么当，天干了卡过来，他或者什么当，我们去卡不休息。 那得当确实的，什么单的话，全部我听的面都是什么花钱了呀？生了一点，现在面都解决用的，对吧？我们给那个一点点的他把的，我的什么毛巴切切的心，毛巴切的送了个团大姐，转到确实，我呢，这里的下心花钱也多了，我呢，那那些给钱，人家搞完事，他这个娘娘面的话，现在他提了，他的。
Yes, it is not easy because we are looking at the great treatises here. You know. Yeah. Normally I say, taking initiation or receiving initiation is nothing. It's very easy, you just sit there. Right? I mean, whether you receive or not is a different question. I mean, you just think you receive, you know. And also, thinking about this, you know, the selflessness, you know, is much more challenging than taking initiations, and even much more challenging than giving initiations. It's very easy to give. Anybody can give initiations. It all depends on whether, of course, there's a difference as to whether the person is qualified or not. But even then, I'm just going through the motions and doing the rituals, and it's very easy. It's very easy. But it is much more challenging to present these teachings, and it's much more challenging to present these teachings, and it's much more challenging to understand these teachings. But it is only through understanding these teachings that then you see a change in the mind, you know. Especially when you think about this, we're talking about reality, isn't it? About life, isn't it? I mean, that's not really my own exaggeration, but the point here is when we think about this, these are the things that will cause the mind to change, you see. And especially when you see, you know, the truth for yourself, you know, you're able to eliminate whatever super impositions or wrong understanding you have, then you gain, you know, that joy and the understanding, you know, that, you know, which is which is not something that you can gain from even initiation number. You see through initiation number, you think, oh yeah, I generate great bliss, and all that. Yeah, that's about it. Great bliss, you know. That's about it. That's great bliss. You know, of course, I mean, we don't have the realization of great bliss, so we cannot talk about feeling great bliss, right? But you know, but the joy that comes from learning, you know, and then from seeing, you know, some truth, you know, and for discovery for ourselves, so that is certain to bring about some, you know, real benefit and joy. So I think mentioned before, so this is my own experience, you know. So I mean, you know, when I think about stuff, you know, I don't understand everything, but if there are some things that I, and then after I've thought about, and then when I gain some, you know, some understanding, you know, then I feel, you know, this joy, you know, how wonderful, you know. I mean, I sit through initiations, you know. I mean, I think, you know, there's bliss, but that's about it, I know. But it's difficult to me to experience, you know, the kind of joy that I find from discovering the teachings, you know. I find it difficult to experience the same joy when I attending initiations. Yeah. So, you know, through our own discovery of the Buddhist teachings, when we study, when we learn, when we think about it, when we start to see some truth, you know, you know, that joy is very different, and then it's only then, you know, then you have some faith in the Buddha's teachings, and in so doing, you have really some faith in Buddha. You know, wow, this is amazing! Wow, like that also can, we say, you know, like that also can. Basically, you know, wow, it's heartfelt, you know, but it can only come through a discovery when we look at the Buddha's teachings and we think about it, you know. I don't think it is possible to have this kind of feel and this kind of discovery by sitting through an initiation. And just by taking initiation, just by, you know, receiving initiation, be present, you have this, the same kind of faith in Buddha, I think it is difficult. So, of course, I'm talking about us ordinary individuals. Most of us are like that, isn't it? Now, of course, now, with the exception of those who really have very high realizations, of course, when they take empowerment, it's a completely different experience. But I mean, we would like to think that we are them, but we're not, is it? I mean, we are ordinary individuals, you know. So, for us, you know, the way out is to make the discovery ourselves through learning the Buddha's teaching, then seeing the authenticity, the truth ourselves. You know. Then when we see that truth, and then, you know, the joy, you know, that you gain is very different, you know, and your faith, you know, you really start to have what called real understanding of what is Buddha, real faith in Buddha. You know. For us, that's the only way, you know. Yeah, so that's why Lama Tsongkhapa keeps saying what? Always say you must learn, must study. I mean, study. I mean, we say here, learn, basically, much educate ourselves, and then we must think about what we have learned, you know, reflect, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's why, you know, you have to think about the four seals, and in particular, you know, what we don't want is suffering. So it's all contaminated phenomena are suffering. So at the end of the day, what we don't want is suffering. In order to overcome suffering, we have to overcome its cause, which is ego grasping, clinging at the self of a person, all this, you know, whatever, you know, language you use, you know, that is what we need to get rid of, yeah. So can we get rid of our suffering just by attending initiations? No, yeah, obviously no. Definitely no. Just attending initiations, you get rid of your suffering? No. So, but you know, we would like to scramble here and there and everywhere, you know, looking for empowerments, but still nothing happens, isn't it? Still there's suffering, isn't it? So because we have not targeted the root of the problem, you see, so is ego grasping, clinging to a self, grasping at the self of a person, you see. So in order to overcome suffering, we have to overcome this grasping at the self of a person. And the only way to do so, the only sole method is to realize selflessness. To realize selflessness, we have to meditate on selflessness. And before you can meditate on selflessness, you have to find out what on earth is selflessness. You have to learn, study what is selflessness. So you see the process, not? You see the process, yeah? So therefore, you see, then only then you understand this, oh, then you see, oh, how important it is, you know, how important it is to study tenets, you know, how important it is, yeah. So this for you see, you have to see the point for yourself, no? So no matter how you think about it, you know, from whatever angle, the conclusion is still the same. You have to learn, you know. Have to educate, you know, there must be education, learning, and then reflection, yeah. At the end of the day, if what we do not want is suffering, if what you want is freedom from suffering, you know, liberation from samsara, then this is the one and only way, yeah. You have to, and so in particular, we have to learn about the selflessness, you know, and to really learn. Before we can even meditate, we have to learn what is selflessness. Then, only then, you can cultivate, you know, the understanding in meditation. And through that, then, definitely, you will be able to reduce the afflictions, you know, and in so doing, definitely, you will reduce suffering and misery. Yeah. So it's very important to gain even an understanding of selflessness before you can meditate on it. But even just to gain that is not an easy feat. It's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. In my case, you know, I mean, I have to teach. I find it extremely difficult to teach. I do read different texts and different commentaries, you know. And then, you know, but it's very difficult to be able to summarize, you know, and put together in some coherent form, you know, oh, that this, that the view is definitely this and not that, you know. And sometimes I even wonder whether, you know, I'm saying the right thing or not, whether I'm actually presenting the right thing or not. So sometimes it's, I have that this feeling is very difficult because it's not straightforward, it's not easy. Even just to settle, you know, in technical language, you know, we settle the view or to delineate the view. This is just delineating, say what is and what is not. That is really very challenging. Forget about realizing for the time being. Even just to be able to say, even to explain what exactly is and not, that itself is very challenging, very difficult. It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. So, according to the Middle Way School, in particular the the Middle Way School, just think about our own experience. How do things appear to us? We don't question, isn't it? You know, we just take it as it is. And, oh, this is how the object is in reality. I mean, in simple English, I'm saying in simple English, I'm not talking about the technical translation, otherwise, no point. Yeah? We basically accept what appears to us. This is how the object exists. There's nothing beyond what appears to us that is the object, basically. Yeah? You see? So, we take that to be the final object, the final reality in non-technical language, the final mode of providing objects. We take that to be, you see? So, according to the Middle Way School, they say that if this is how phenomena really exist, if this is how they really existed in reality, that would mean that that object exists in the way it appears. That would mean that that object is ultimately established. That would mean that that object is truly established. Now. Okay, so if things and events existed in the way they appear, so they appear to exist. No, basically, we don't question it. We take it that is how the thing exists. That is the ultimate way, the only way how it exists, right? So if we accept that this is how the object exists, that means the object is truly established. Established in the way it appears to us. It's truly established, it's ultimately established. Whoa, if you accept that, then you have a problem. Why? Then that phenomena would have to exist in the perspective of an ultimate awareness. So if phenomena existed in the way it appears, that would be truly established, they would be ultimately established. If that's the case, that would mean that the phenomena would have to exist in the perspective of an ultimate awareness. And specifically, what is this ultimate awareness? It is the awareness that posits an ultimate truth, and in specifically the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness. So if phenomena existed in the way it appears, in short, they would have to exist in the perspective of the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness. So according to the Middle Way School, so therefore when you think about it, when they logic it, when they think it through, they say that phenomena are not truly established. Phenomena are not ultimately established. Yeah. So, and this is just the general procedure of the middle way school. You know? And then when we, and because you know that in middle way school there are two divisions. Yeah, the, basically the ultimate, the highest view is the consequence of middle way school. Oh, their explanation is even more subtle. Okay, so. So according to the final view, the ultimate, the highest school, so they say that everything, you know, it's very difficult. Everything is mere name. Everything is mere, just name. Everything is mere, it exists, it's merely imputed by mind. Just that. Oh. Very difficult. So I thought to say all what I've said today, you know, because I thought it might be of benefit, you see, because you know, I mean, it's natural that people may wonder, you know, why are we studying all this for what? Right, you don't see, you know, you feel a disconnect, right? Why am I studying thousands of persons, thousands of phenomena, blah, 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 you know? So that's why if I thought what I've said today might be helpful, you know? So you think it through again, you know, and go through that process from the beginning, you know, and try to relate it, you know, what you're studying to your mind, okay? Okay? So when we say we meditate what? Meditate, basically just going through in our own minds. We have to do it on ourselves, our own power. Thinking, for example, along the lines of what I've talked about today from the beginning, you know, how, you know, you check your own experience, whether in order for us to be attached or to be upset, does the I has to come into the picture? Yeah. And check, you know, our own experience, when the I comes into the picture, then how does it lead to all these emotional involvement, anger, attachment, you know. And then think about how phenomena other than the eye, how they appear to us, and how, you know, when they appear to us as pleasant, unpleasant, how we get emotionally involved, and through that, do we get upset? Do we get attached? And if we are able to counteract the kind of grasping, then will it lead to a reduction in our afflictions? So these are some of the things that we have to think on ourselves. And then when we say meditate, this what's that's meditation, lah. What else is there, no? So for now, if you can just think of what I've just said today, it's kind of an outline, something for you to think about, you know, on your own and meditate and do your own discovery. Yeah. Okay. And so far, in terms of the selflessness of phenomena, we've only talked about the emptiness of subject and object as different entities. Yeah. Basically, there's no external object. Everything is a projection of the mind, right? So that is relatively straightforward, quite easy, you know. But, you know, what about the other aspects of the mind only school? For example, how phenomena do not exist as the natural basis or reference of names. Even just to say that, even just to explain that is so difficult. No? So this is something maybe we'll do in the next lesson. I will try, okay?
Okay, now finish.
Okay, so there's some announcements. The reason why we finished earlier is because there's some announcements. Yeah. Okay, so you want to take notes, you take notes, okay? This is called Kelong. This is called giving you a heads up. Don't say we all know Zhao Goyu. So for those of you who are interested in going to on the trip with us to South India in December, His Holiness will give a